This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Lots of information coming out from a weekend poll. Headline in the Star Tribune yesterday, most want reform, not fewer cops. This was a poll done September 9th to 33 about policing in the city of Minneapolis in the face of this ballot question that seeks to replace the Minneapolis Police Department with the Department of Public Safety. And the headline is twofold. While a majority of Minneapolis voters who were polled oppose reducing the size of the city's police force, voters showing support for replacing the Minneapolis Police Department. Somebody is quoted in the story, somebody who's literally writing a book on police reform in the city of Minneapolis. She is Michelle Phelps, sociology professor at the University of Minnesota, who joins us now. Michelle, thank you so much for joining us. My first question is this, even though the only poll that really matters is the one that concludes in November, the vote. But with the snapshot that these poll numbers show us, what most surprised you?
Hi, thanks for having me. So, you know, largely the poll results were pretty similar to what I was expecting. We had seen an earlier poll last month from MinnPost about support and opposition for the charter amendment, where support was a little bit lower. And I think what these polls show, and this poll had a better sampling design than that one, but I think they really show that it's really a coin toss right now whether the charter amendment goes through or not. And so we should expect to see some really active campaigns in the coming months as proponents and opponents of the charter amendment attempt to sway those undecided voters.
And we've read all about the money that is being spent to try to sway those voters. One thing that stood out to me, Michelle, and I'm wondering if you found it as interesting, on the question that asked voters, likely voters, do you think Minneapolis should or should not reduce the size of its police force? 51% of whites responding said they should not, while 33% said they should. Black respondents, 75% said they should not, with 14% saying that they should. Those were in line with Republicans who were asked the same question. Does that surprise you? What did you make of that question and the results that we see?
Yeah, so I think, you know, one of the things that's really standing out to people in this poll is that there's a gap between the racial divide on support for the charter amendment and the racial divide on support for substantially reducing the number of officers. And I think the way to think about it is that the people who are saying that they support the charter are really a coalition of people, some of whom see the charter as a way to do more bold police reforms, and some of whom support reducing the number of officers substantially. And so there's just real debate among that group. When I see the racial divides, though, what that leads me to think that black voters are less supportive than white voters of the charter amendment by a small margin, and then much less supportive of substantially reducing the number of officers compared to white voters, is that black voters in Minneapolis are more likely to live in the kind of high-crime communities and neighborhoods where persistent concerns about victimization are more prevalent. And so I think that's highlighting just how complicated this issue is, right? That people want to really reimagine public safety. They want safety. They want different kinds of responses. They want to do something about police violence. But people also want to feel safe in their neighborhoods. And I think we're seeing that in the poll results.
We're talking to Michelle Phelps, sociology professor at the University of Minnesota. Is that part of the problem, though, with the convoluted nature of the question itself and the fact that at least the people we're talking to in our newsroom here, including businesses and residents of Minneapolis, just don't have a clear idea of what is on the other side? Let's say this amendment is approved and now we're replacing the police department with the Department of Public Safety, that there's really no clear definition yet as to what the outcome is.
That's right. And the way I think about it is that the charter amendment, the proposal really changes the shape of the political debate, which I know is a wonky way of saying it, but it changes who has power and what kind of power over policing more than it establishes exactly what policing will look like in the future or public safety more broadly. And part of that is about what the city charter actually does. So the city charter doesn't typically have a lot of detail about departments. That goes into ordinances. And one of the complexities of this process is that city council has been told that they can't work on those ordinances while the city charter vote is up on the election because it would be seen as campaigning for it. And so they haven't been able to show us, for instance, what those ordinances for the new department might look like, which is kind of an unfortunate process point. But I think the way to think about the charter amendment is that it would eliminate the mandatory minimum staffing. It would attempt to reorient a department around public safety and this public health approach, and it would shift power from the mayor's complete control over the police department to more divided control between the city council and the mayor. And so I think when people are deciding how they feel about the charter amendment, whether they support it or not, it's a really complex calculation of those three things and whether they think the combination of those changes together will push public safety in a better direction or not.
We've mentioned it before, and the money being spent, and you just mentioned it too, the two main groups here that are either for or opposing this amendment, the money being spent by those groups in advertising for this and in campaigning for this, do we see the influence it's having on some of the poll numbers we've seen released this weekend?
You know, I don't know that we have enough of kind of pre-post estimates of changes over time to estimate which of those campaigns is having an influence. I think perhaps we'll see that in the weeks to come. You know, I know certainly there's been a lot of conversation around the all of Minneapolis mailers and some of the language used to describe the charter amendment on that and concerns about that language being misleading. So I think we'll see lots more debate about those mailers. But the social science literature is actually really pretty mixed on how easy it is to sway voters with those kinds of mailing and TV spots. So I think we'll see a lot of voters making up their minds, and I think it'll be really complicated to try and determine how much the fundraising of both sides of the charter amendment influenced those votes.
The reason I asked to have you on today, because you're quoted in the article and it mentions that you're writing a book on police reform in Minneapolis. Tell me about that project and when you started and how far along in that project are you?
Sure. Yeah. So I started back in 2016, and it was in the midst of the sort of first wave of Black Lives Matter protests. And the initial idea of the book project was to think about sort of who are the people who have a stake in policing in Minneapolis, and how are they defining the problems in policing as they see it and working to change it. And so I did a series of interviews over a couple of years of activists and political leaders and journalists, but also everyday residents in the neighborhoods most impacted by crime and policing, really to try and get a sense of these issues from all angles. And I was wrapping up the project, actually, in the summer before last when George Floyd, of course, was murdered by MPD officers. And after that, with the Powderhorn Declaration and the start of what is now the charter amendment before us, the book really shifted to thinking about how cities like Minneapolis are trying to rethink policing and some of the challenges in doing so.
Tell me about that. And when in May of 2020, when the world changes and it changes right here in Minneapolis, tell me how it changes how you approach what you were doing.
That's right. I mean, and, you know, I think the depressing thing is in some ways everything changed and in some ways nothing changed, right? We still have the police department largely as it existed before, although we've seen a number of staff departures, of course, and efforts towards police reform through the mayor and the chief. But in many ways, we have the same police department and the same set of practices that we had before. And I think part of what the case of Minneapolis shows is that policing is so challenging to change or reform because police means so many different things to different people, and even the same people at different moments, right? One day you ask somebody about the police, and what's salient to them is that somebody, that an officer pulled them over for no good reason, and they're thinking about racial profiling and discrimination. One day you ask a person, and, you know, there's been a high-profile case of police violence in the media, and that's what they're thinking about. You ask them another day where a, you know, high-profile homicide is in the media, or other kinds of violence and disorder in the city, and instead they're thinking about police and their own safety and the desire for police to create safety. So I think police come to stand in for all of these things that people want, right? Safety and belonging and freedom, in a way that makes it really difficult to move the conversation forward. And, you know, I think the most depressing part is that police actually control a relatively small amount of the kinds of conditions that produce crime and violence, and yet get a disproportionate share of both the blame and the rewards when crime goes up or crime goes down. And I think part of what's been hopeful to me about this moment that we're in right now is really trying to have more of a public conversation about what are the kinds of things we need to do beyond policing in affordable housing, in economic support, in all of in education, right? All of these other things that also contribute to people feeling safe and thriving in their communities.
Fascinating stuff. Michelle, I know you have to get going. Thank you so much for taking some time to talk with us on WCCO Radio today.
Sure thing. Thank you for having me.
Michelle Phelps, sociology professor at the University of Minnesota, writing a book on police reform, going over some of those numbers that were released in the Star Tribune this weekend. 1247, News Talk 830 WCCO. That is your Lindis Construction time check. Time to call for your free and no obligation roof estimate. So comprehensive information provided by this poll. Again, just to go over this, this is the poll from Star Tribune, NPR, and Care 11 about the police question and the future of Minneapolis. And there's really two headlines. Again, while clear majority of the voters who were surveyed think that it's a wrong move to reduce the size of the city's police force, they are supportive of replacing the Minneapolis Police Department with a new agency. But as I was going over that yesterday in the newspaper and kind of reading those numbers, that is the thing that struck me, is about that number, about, or the question about number of officers. Do you think Minneapolis should or should not reduce the size of its police force? Responding, the white people responding, 33% think they should reduce the size, 51% think they should not. Now, the black respondents, 14% said they should reduce the size, 75% of black respondents to this survey said absolutely not, they should not reduce the size of the force. Now, to equate that to, they broke it down between Democrats and Republicans responding to that question. It's almost identical with white and Democrats. 33% should reduce, 53% should not. Republicans, 13% should not, should reduce, 79% should not reduce. And again, you can't help but think of that question. And well, a texter texts in right now. And if you have thoughts on this, by all means, 651-461-9226. 651-461-9226. The racists are guilted white liberal protesters that believe they have to take care of the black community, which in itself is racist. Now, that question has me wondering, okay, is this a situation where a horror, as a horrible and awful event as the murder of George Floyd was, there is no denying the systemic racism just inherent in policing in the United States. And it's not a matter, it's not, and to say that is not to say that, boy, you know, cops, when they sign up for the job, they either, there's something in their mind that says, you know, this is a good opportunity for a racist, or that a police training itself is racist. Is not, that's not what we're saying. Systemic racism, meaning that over time, that the efforts they use to police in this country are rooted in racist policies, or rooted in actual racism that happened in this country at the end of the Civil War. The problem is, as horrible an event as that was, is there a certain part of this population, including a lot of white liberal people in the populace, who say, we know best. We stand with our black brethren, but we have the way to fix this. And this policing measure, the radical change to this police department is something that they will want. When I think safety, first of all, is the top pressing question. And I think it's foolish to assume that the black community wants radical change in the police department at the same. And that means no cops. And I do not think it does.
No, but I think, you know, first of all, that text, if you look up gaslighting in the dictionary, yeah, that text shows up. The thing about that poll that stands out is that change, people want something to have to change, right? That's clear.
Yep.
That the majority of the citizens in the city of Minneapolis want there to be change within the Minneapolis Police Department. As always, it's digging down into what is that going to look like and how is that going to work.
Which is the big problem.
But where she pointed out, and I think this is interesting, the complexity of this in having to change the charter so that we can start to have discussions of, you know, what is that new Minneapolis Police Department going to look like? What are staffing levels going to look like? That's where this gets into the weeds, because if they have to change the charter in order to be able to have those discussions publicly, you can't tell, you know, then we have all these people clamoring, well, what is it going to look like on the other side before I vote for this?
Mm-hmm.
They can't do it.
Right.
That's what Dr. Phelps is claiming. That's a problem.
Which is a major problem.
That's a huge problem. And there's been some communication issues in that regard. Because that hasn't been communicated clearly to people in the city of Minneapolis, obviously. And I don't blame anybody that's looking at this going, wait a minute, what is this? This language appears to be very open-ended. And the idea, again, of having 14 people in charge of the police department just seems obnoxiously problematic. And easily, you can easily look at that and go, yeah, that's going to lead to a big mess. And that's where folks have to kind of drill down on this amendment, figure out where they stand.
I mean, I get it. We have to saying, you know, this is a rule change we have to do first to have the conversation. But again, that's the biggest problem. And that's really the problem that a lot of people are asking. It's like, OK,
where are the safeguards? Yeah, where are the safeguards?
And I mean, and you talk about bad timing with the current crime situation in the city of Minneapolis, trying to ask people, OK, well, you know, we're going to police differently. Well, how about, you know, policing just to start? And the issues we have now with trying to keep officers, and we have officers leaving the department and trying to recruit new ones, which is a big question I don't think is getting talked about enough yet. And I know next hour we're talking to Sheriff Dave Hutchinson of the Hennepin County Sheriff's Department. With all these people leaving
Okay.
You rolled your eyes there. I corrected myself. But with so many officers leaving, retiring, or saying, you know what, it ain't worth it anymore, which you can't blame them. Recruitment for new officers. Yeah. We've already heard about the problems recruiting new officers. Well, what about the standards we want? You know, the bad apple theory. We've got to eliminate bad apples. Well, if you can't hire officers and suddenly maybe you have to lower your standards to just put, you know, bodies in uniforms, where does that leave us? We'll keep taking your texts on that. 651-461-9226. But get your list together. Overrated, underrated, properly rated. Coming up next on WCCO.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Odyssey is giving you a chance to win a trip to London to see Taylor Swift at the Eras Tour. It's Tay in the UK.
Hey, it's Taylor.
Just download the free Odyssey app, log in and listen to a participating station for a minimum of 60 minutes to get your daily entry. And you could win a chance to fly off to London with three friends and see Taylor.
I can't wait to see you at the Eras Tour in London.
For more, go to odyssey.com/Taylor.
Tay in the UK.
It's on the Odyssey app. Thanks to Republic Records. This is a national contest.